So I'd like to, let's just dive in. So here is again the light meat eater scenario that we've been talking about a little bit this afternoon. The point is, when you have a light meat eater connecting dark matter to the standard model, two things happen. One is that the dynamics of the light meat eater affects how you organize your search strategies. So this is our light meat eater framework for complementarity. And the other thing that Maxime taught us is that you have two couplings. You have a coupling to the dark matter and a coupling to the standard model. So one nice observation is that you can maintain dark matter annihilation, which only depends on the coupling to the mediator, while parametric suppressing your direct detection and your fixed target bounds. And coming from Riverside, I'm obligated to mention that you also have this effect of self-scattering. So what I'd like to highlight is something old, something new. And this is the idea that dark matter can capture in the Earth. So let's walk through it. So the Earth is traveling through a WIMP wind, or a dark matter wind. Dark matter can smack against a chunk of the Earth, iron. And sometimes when it does that, it can fall into the Earth's gravitational potential. It collects in the center of the Earth. And if it can annihilate, it'll annihilate into these mediators. And if the parameters are just so, these mediators can propagate through the Earth, and they can decay near the surface, where we can hope to search for the charged lepton tracks through something like ice cubes, something big that can look for charged leptons. Now, this is not a new idea. So the papers, some of the papers here were written before some of the students here were born. And in fact, this is a favorite way to search for WIMPs, literal WIMPs, like weakly interacting through the Z boson. This general framework is a way to search for WIMPs in the sun, annihilating into neutrinos, because the neutrinos get through the sun. These took on a new life in the past 10 years. So Maxime was one of the people who did this in the guise of light mediators. Also, I think you guys were looking at the sun. And I'll talk a little bit about current work at the end of the talk. We will discuss this in the framework of dark photons. This is just a very nice benchmark for light mediators. So here is everything you need to know about dark photons. We will choose, so the one thing we're really going to choose is the coupling of the dark photons to the dark matter to be such that you can maintain a thermal relic. So thermal freeze out is something that we like, and we're going to stay under that lamppost. The other parameters are the mass of the dark matter, how much the dark photon mixes with the ordinary photon, and the mass of the dark photon. So these are three parameters. So there's a three-dimensional parameter space where I want to argue, hey, actually, this search is meaningful. This search can probe new regimes. And the numbers I've given here, so dark matter of WIMPy scale, kinetic mixing of around 10 to the minus 8, and a dark photon mass of around a GeV, that is the result. So when we scan through this three-dimensional parameter space, that is the ballpark where this could be interesting. And just to spoil everything, here's what it looks like. So again, this is another one of Maxime's plots. It's now a few years old, but the point here is this is the dark photon parameter space where the x-axis is the mass of the dark photon. The y-axis is the mixing with the ordinary photon. So the third axis in this search is the dark matter mass, which I'm not showing. Sorry. There are a lot of people in the room who will be also on the slides. And just to show, what I really like about this is you go all the way down, you see the cosmological bounds. And we're going to live up in that corner. And in fact, you have beam dumps, neutrino bounds, supernovae bounds. We're living off in this corner. And where we're really peeking out of are the bounds from direct detection. OK, so things you should be thinking about. So these contours are contours of how many events would you see in Ice Cube over the course of a 10-year run. And I leave it up to you just to figure out whether 10 upward going tracks is enough against background to really be a smoking gun. So here's the second contour, is 10 events. You should be thinking about, why is the shape like this? Why is it so jagged? Do we just have garbage computers in Southern California? What sets the shape here? All right, so let's go through the actual process. Dark matter captures in the Earth. And in fact, we should start by thinking about how much dark matter is in the Earth? Well, the amount of dark matter in the Earth is something which we'll call n chi. The rate of change of the total amount of dark matter in the Earth is equal to the rate at which dark matter captures, I call it C cap, okay, so that's some capture rate, minus the rate at which it annihilates. So I've normalized that with n chi squared, right? Because the rate at which it annihilates depends on how often two dark matter particles find each other, so it's proportional to n chi squared. This is a fairly simple differential equation that even I can plug into Mathematica. and the solution is this tanh. So what actually is important is there is a dimensional quantity, which is this equilibrium time tau, which is the geometric mean of these two rates. And this tanh, as you remember, interpolates between 0 and 1 very sharply. And what this is saying is that you maximize your annihilation rate when this tanh is 1. You maximize this annihilation rate when the age of the Earth is larger than this equilibrium time. Before that time, the Earth is just sucking up dark matter. Every pair of dark matter particles collects, it's just collecting them, they don't find each other, they're falling into the center of the Earth. Once you reach the saturation time, basically every time you collect a pair of dark matter particles, two other dark matter particles annihilate. So we want the age of the Earth to be bigger than this. And this is why 20, 30 years ago, people were not talking about this for the Earth. Because if you calculate this for a literal WIMP, so for a neutralino, this really sucks. The age of the Earth is way too big, sorry, way too small compared to the equilibrium time. Okay, so let's figure out where dark mediators, light mediators come to help. We want to calculate this capture rate. Right? It seems like the capture rate's everything. The annihilation rate is simple enough, but the capture rate's everything. So dark matter captures in the Earth. When? When it smacks on some nucleus in the Earth, such that the outgoing dark matter has less kinetic energy, has negative kinetic energy. Or in other words, the outgoing velocity of the dark matter is less than the escape velocity of the Earth. Then it falls into the Earth's gravitational potential. So that is the condition. And the diagram is, oh, well, what do you know? This is just the direct detection diagram. And in fact, the calculation, so you go and you pick up your favorite direct detection calculation, and the calculation for the capture rate is exactly planetary scale direct detection. So you take a target, I can be iron, you integrate over the volume of your detector, weighted by the density of the target, so Ni of r is the density of iron in the Earth, and you integrate over the velocity distribution. So f of u is the asymptotic dark matter velocity, f of u is a distribution, which is roughly Maxwell-Boltzmann. And then you have this funny warp factor here coming from the fact that actually, in the Earth frame, as dark matter comes close to the Earth, it's accelerated, or heated, heating soup, as normal says, as it approaches the Earth. And then you integrate over this recoil energy. So this is your differential cross-section. That's the usual thing in direct detection. Here's something like a Helm form factor. Right, this is really just encoding the cosine theta of the angular integral. Most critically, there's this theta function. So the place where this differs from direct detection is that there are conditions for dark matter to capture. If you have a bowling ball hurtling very quickly at a ping pong ball, there's nothing that ping pong ball can do to get the bowling ball to slow down very much. So this theta function is encoding that the minimum amount of energy that the dark matter has to impart on the nucleus, right, it has to impart all of its kinetic energy to capture, the minimum amount of energy it has to impart is less than the maximum amount of energy allowed by the kinematics of the system. So this is actually really fun. This is something that this is the thing throttling this process. So this region of integration, once you put this theta function on, it's actually really, really tiny. And this is partly why for WIMP, literal WIMP dark matter, this equilibrium time is very big. So, okay, this does not work for WIMPs. What could possibly be different for light mediators? Well, one thing that many of us learned from Tracy is that, as recently as an hour ago, is that you can have long-range forces. So if you have dark matter and anti-dark matter and a light mediator, these things attract each other. So when these things fall into the center of the Earth, you have these self-interactions. And my colleague, Haibo, loves to talk about self-interactions for dwarf galaxies and looking at mass profiles. The center of the Earth is way colder than any dwarf galaxy. These things are very non-relativistic. And you can get a huge Sommerfeld enhancement in the annihilation rate because dark matter is trying to find each other to annihilate. Right? So 10 to the minus 6 is an approximate velocity. OK, so Sommerfeld enhancement. I can calculate that. It goes something like this, 2 pi, the coupling divided by velocity. And if you want to be really, really fancy, you can get the denominator on there, too. Yeah, so this is for the massless limit, the top one. This is for the massless limit. Something changes when you take into account the mass of the mediator. You get this horrible monstrosity. Okay, so this horrible monstrosity. I can see hyperbolic stuff. I don't know how I feel about that. I see trig functions. I don't know how I feel about that. It looks kind of weird. What's the physics here? What's the difference between a zero mass mediator and a mediator with finite mass? You get some potential, the potential effects scattering. You go from a Coulomb potential to Yukawa potential. The Yukawa potential is not scale invariant. The Yukawa potential can support shallow bound states. So what these weird, triggy stuff are doing is it's encoding the fact that you can have resonances in this dark matter, anti-dark matter system, in the Sommerfeld enhancement. So if I look at the equilibrium time, I should expect to see something that looks like resonances. And lo and behold, so here are contours on the dark photon mass kinetic mixing plane of the, now I have it inverted, the equilibrium time in units of the Earth's age. And this very lightly green shaded region on the top left are all regions where you have saturated the Earth with dark matter. This is what's different in the light mediator scenario compared to the WIMP scenario. Right? Now, there are large regions of parameter space where the Earth is saturated with dark matter, and you can start to think about what happens when these guys annihilate. And very nicely, the light mediator scenario also gives us a weakly interacting, very weakly interacting particle that can pass through the Earth as a final state. OK, so there it is, the annihilation rate. I've showed you how to calculate the capture rate. This tanh squared is basically 1. And this is an annihilation rate. This is indirect detection. This diagram is indirect detection. And I never had to say J factor. So OK, this is propaganda. You of course, have some astrophysical uncertainty in the local dark matter density, but it's linear, not quadratic. So that's a cute observation. Then the next thing you can do is figure out what happens once these things are produced. So now you have some flux of dark photons coming out of the Earth. And so they're really just coming radially outwards, right? And really, I mean, upwards, not kind of upwards. Like this little purple circle at the core of the Earth where dark matter thermalizes forms a little Maxwell-Boltzmann ball. The angular size of that is the size of a penny on the ground from about my height. I think pennies are about the same size in Canada as they are south. So it's really upward going. And so you can use directionality to discriminate against background. And assuming that these outward going particles are very collimated, so you're really just looking for one track, you can figure out then do the simple calculation for the angular size of this thing coming out for Ice Cube and figure out the number of signal events, and then you get these contours. So this is the picture that I showed you earlier. So again, the usual dark photon plot, dark photon mass, and kinetic mixing on the y-axis for a fixed value of the dark matter mass. Why 10 TeV? Because that's where it's interesting. 10 TeV gives you a lot more boost to your dark photons. Why is it shaped like this? Well, for epsilons bigger than this triangular region, you're decaying inside the Earth. Your dark photon isn't boosted enough to get to Ice Cube. For epsilons smaller than around here, you're being hit by the equilibrium time. The Earth hasn't saturated with dark matter. Why is it wiggly? The effect of all these wiggly things is coming from the shallow bound states, from the Sommerfeld enhancement. So down to 1 TeV, the contours move a bit. So direct detection doesn't change because we're fixing the coupling to be a thermal relic. And if you want propaganda, so here's let me slice this in a different plane. Let me slice it in the direct detection plane. So this is now the dark matter mass and the dark matter nucleon cross section for a fixed value of MA. And I've chosen MA to be provocative, right? There's a continuum of these, but there's some region of MA where these 1, 10, 100 event contours are kind of splitting the gap between at least the old Lux results and the neutrino floor. So this is the propaganda plot saying, hey, this can actually hit some new regions. Okay, so that's that. One thing that I think is really interesting though is golly, we really actually have two tracks. Maybe they're really collimated, and maybe IceCube is just very sparsely instrumented on human scales, but there really are two tracks. There's a muon and an anti-muon, or an electron and a positron. What would it take to look for them? And one thing which is kind of surprising is that it takes more than we have, but not that much more. The two handles that we have are the opening angle of the, say, mu plus mu minus pair, and the time delay, according to the angle of the dark photon decay. And the typical opening angle has a separation of around 10 meters. The separation of strings in IceCube is about 100 meters. So you're just off by an order of magnitude. The time delay is typically 0.1 nanoseconds, which to me sounds like a really, really short time delay. But these DOMs in IceCube actually have fantastic timing resolution. And there you're also only about an order of magnitude off. So one thing you can think about is how you could optimize this search. So last I understood, IceCube did look for parallel tracks from Slepton searches. But they didn't really optimize this, trying to combine timing resolution and physical space resolution to see whether you could really resolve the parallel tracks from something like a dark photon. I think that's because the postdoc went to industry. Good. Then I'd say the directionality is the thing which helps with the smoking gun. All right, so then now that you have a program, you just point to every single object with a gravitational field. The moon turns out to be too small. The sun was a favorite for the WIMP. If you did literally the same search for the sun, let me just say very quickly, everything looks great because AMS actually has like a 1 degree angular resolution. AMS could just look at the sun, you know, the thing you shouldn't do, but you look at the sun and you just look for positrons. Sounds great until you take into account the sun's B field, which smears your signal to hell. So if you're looking for charged particles, the sun is not a great target. So this is actually the converse of the WIMP story. For dark matter capture, the sun was great for WIMPs. You look at neutrinos. The Earth was terrible. For dark photons, the Earth is actually pretty good, and the sun gets harder if you're looking for charged particles. Okay, so here's the analogous plot for AMS. It's not particularly great. Let me just, two last things. Why I think this is really neat. So why I think this is really neat is because we're kind of doing this evolution where we started off with make it, shake it, break it. And then we adapted that to light meat eaters. They say, oh, actually, the dynamics of the light meat eater changes its complementarity, bends the rules, and allows us to generalize. And of course, you could think about making a more general framework at the cost of predictivity. But then there are searches like this where you stay under the light meat eater lamppost and find ways to remix these different searches. And this is the kind of fun thing that I want to talk about more at this workshop, finding ways to look for light mediators beyond the thing that we've inherited from WIMPs. And just to close, just to highlight more names of people in the room, so we heard Nirmal's talk, which is a cousin of dark matter capture. And I can't stop without mentioning gamma ray searches. Right? The sun is not great because its B field smears the charged particle signatures. But if the dark photon goes into photons as a final state, either directly or as a byproduct of going to B quarks, then you can look for these photons. So this is something that Maxime and Adam and Kenny and John have worked on. So with that, thank you very much.
So your expression for the Sommerfeld enhancement, can you actually use that in resonance?
Good. Yes. Yeah, so good. So this is not literally true on resonance, but I think you recently wrote a paper in the past year or two about how much it gets smeared out, and the smearing is negligible compared to.
It's more or less if that number is if the cross section you get is less than the unitarity bound. It'll
be okay.
Yeah. If it's above the unitary bound, it
should be unitary. Okay. Okay. It's more or less out of the box. So this is an exact something you've got, or is it for this? That's exactly, it's Wolfen. Yeah, that's what that is. So you mentioned at the end self-interacting dark matter. Mm-hmm. And also this dark matter here that has some,
yeah,
is also
self-interacting. Yeah. So if you go back to slide 6, anyway.
So, capture can occur also because the dark matter scatters off dark matter.
Good.
And then this C capture should have any kind.
Good.
And the solution is different, right?
Yes, in principle. So if I rush through several slides. So Zentner actually, yeah, sorry. Forget this. Zentner actually did this, and if you do a quick estimate with the light mediators, it's really hard to get into a regime where the self capture, which shows up here in the equilibrium time, has a big effect. It's really hard for this thing to beat these two. But yes, what you're saying is absolutely correct. It's just the numbers don't work out in that favor.
Yeah. So this may be a very trivial question. So your alphas to these constraints is what you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, for the message you're talking about, you have a pretty appreciable self-help enhancement. Have you checked that you don't have any error detection now? Like, I know you're not going to say that.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Still, if you've got a self-help enhancement several orders of magnitude, like, I'm thinking about, like, seeing the amount of four galaxy amounts, whether it's four velocities.
Yes. Good. So, I believe.
Okay.
The green line here is the maximal coupling of the dark matter to the dark photon, where maximal is defined as being bounded by, I think it's Gaussian bounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah. So that's the AMX range. So what happens?
I think it was similar.
Yeah. So
it was similar for the other ones, where it's outside the.
So it
would be somewhere like around here. It would be outside of this. I might be answering something slightly different from what you're saying.
So the thermal cross section gets mostly the set by alpha and chi.
Yeah.
And so these are like two sort of orthogonal parameters,
yeah.
So I don't really understand.
So I believe one way of saying this, I think the better way of saying this is that because the green contours, which is the maximum are outside, this is the same thing saying that alpha x is smaller than the bounds of by CFB distortions. Alpha X thermal is smaller.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's on the.
It's close.
Okay.